Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Volnick with you guys here on The Fan. Going to be joined by Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com here shortly. But before we do, I want to remind you that Browns OTAs are underway in minicamp just around the corner, and there are plenty of storylines at the quarterback position. Don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 92.3thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. A lot to get into with a Cavs team that I just look at, and there's a lot that goes into this Cavs team in general, a lot that goes into last night that I think is a lot more simply put than a three-word phrase. We'll figure out if, again, our good friend, as we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, Ethan Sands at Cleveland.com can sum it up a little bit more quickly. Ethan, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. I think the only way to start this interview is to ask you the question that all Cavs fans, I think, to this moment are probably still asking themselves. What happened in Game 4?
I think a reflection of what happened in Game 2, right? A destructive collapse of the season, of the series, and then you feel like you're going to get everybody back in Game 3. You do that, you come back, you get a win, and then another injury plagues the team, and you see how Donovan Mitchell reacted at halftime. And the understanding is of this team that they feel like that they can come back from a 3-1 series deficit, but the reality of the situation is it feels like the will of this team has been broken. It feels like they have been through a lot throughout the course of this season, and we're continuing to see things being broken down into a very small factor, that they continue to get to this April-May situation and cannot get over the hump. Last year, it was the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Boston Celtics. The year before, it was the first round against the New York Knicks, and here we are again in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Indiana Pacers. So whether the team changes, doesn't feel like the whole narrative has changed for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Ethan, is it fair to say that the Cavs, after getting that win in Game 3, being in control for pretty much the entirety of that game, got complacent in Game 4 and that showed through?
I don't think it could be labeled as complacency. I think there was always a level of desperation, especially knowing that they were still down 2-1 and the history of a 3-1 deficit. They understood the complexity of having to come back from that. So I don't think there was any complacency. I just think there was a reality check that Rick Carlisle made some fantastic adjustments, some schematic adjustments that stifled the Cavs, and the Cavs weren't able to bounce back from that, even though that's what they've done all year, is make adjustments. And yet they've been out-coached, out-hustled, out-maneuvered, out-everything when it comes to this series so far.
We saw the 3-2 zone work so well in Game 3, and it was really what probably propelled the Cavs to their win, stifled Indiana's defense in that first half incredibly well. And then we sort of see it again last night. Indiana made some key adjustments. What actually changed between the Indiana offense from Games 3 to 4 that allowed them to beat that?
instead of trying to attack Evan Mobley on the perimeter, they were able to find mismatches on the interior, whether that was against Jared Allen, but also an understanding that if you're going to run that 3-2 zone, there's likely two guards in the back playing safety with Evan Mobley at the top of that zone. So you either have Max Strus or Darius Garland, who's trying to be hidden, even though Kenny Atkinson, he said he wasn't going to hide Darius Garland. He put him in the back of that zone, and you guys got guys like Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner, who can not only stretch the floor, but can still also be dominant on in the painted area. So that's what they did. They were able to go at after those mismatches and eliminate what Evan Mobley was able to do, because the whole point of a 3-2 zone is to not have so much overhelp from what the Cavs have been doing. So leaving Evan Mobley on that island, you kind of also put your backcourt at a disadvantage who are trying to protect the rim, unfortunately, in that situation. And again, like I said, that's Rick Carlisle finding the nicks and crannies and allowing his team to be put in the best situation to be successful, whether that was shooting the ball or getting into transition or slowing the game down, even though we haven't seen that so much from the Pacers, but they were able to do it in game four and attack the painted area. And for me, that's the biggest nuance of this series is throughout the entire series up until game four, the Cavs had dominated the painted area, but that wasn't the case in game four. And Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, I mean, they were just bad, man. I mean, Jared Allen had one field goal attempt throughout the entire course of the game. Evan Mobley was non-existent on the offensive end, and they weren't on the rebounding end either. They weren't getting on the board. So I think it was indicative of how the series had shifted and had changed into the momentum of the Indiana Pacers.
So I saw a lot of people pointing to, obviously, it felt like the Cavs just sort of got, you know, out-physicaled again. Everything was going the way the Pacers, you talk about the big man down low. Hey, did you look at the Benedict Mathurin ejection with the back and forth between him and DeAndre Hunter is a sort of turning point for the physicality in that game?
It was supposed to be for the Cavs.
Right.
I wrote about this for Cleveland.com. I said, like, that was supposed to be the moment that the Cavs took an advantage, right? Because the Indiana Pacers lost Benedict Mathurin, who was the leading scorer for them in game three, and the Cavs got away with one, keeping DeAndre Hunter on the floor. So now you're playing against some of the rotation players that, Rick Carlisle had used that throughout the series, that necessarily wasn't who he wanted to go to in those moments. So at that moment, the Cavs should have pushed on the throttle. Instead, Darius Garland said after the game that that's when the physicality for them decreased. Obviously, they had a good amount of players in foul trouble, and that didn't help them at all. But it's an understanding of taking the moment and responding to it. And the Indiana Pacers in that moment showed so much poise, composure, and an understanding that that was a turning point in the game, but they turned it on their own. They turned it on its side for them. And it was an important factor for the Cavs to realize that they were going to have to bounce back, but they just didn't.
I think a lot of these times, and Ethan Sands with us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, I think a lot of the times, at least from a fan perspective, knowing that it's a team game, but a lot of people can walk away from a game and go, wow, that was a really bad performance from, you know, player X, coach X, and I think that, you know, you could pin this loss on them. Again, in the fan eyes, I think we know in the media, like, you can't really do that. It's a team game. It's never one player. But this felt like a game that you walk away as a Cavs fan going, I don't even know a player that you could pin that loss on, or that you could pin it necessarily on Kenny Atkinson alone. Is this as total as a team loss as you're ever going to see?
Yes. Yes, 100%. Because I think it showed you that, like, Evan Mobley was the piece that took them to game three, took them to a different level. And obviously Donovan Mitchell was phenomenal in game three, as he has been all series. But when you lose Donovan Mitchell, even when you had Donovan Mitchell in that first half, you guys are down 44, 41 points at halftime, right? So I think when you talk about team loss, and that's what we talk about when it comes to breaking the spirit of the team, you felt like there was nothing you could have done to change the outcome of the game. And I think that's draining. I think that's debilitating. And I think that's something that the Cavs will have to take a look at even when the series ends, whether that's in game five, game six, or game seven.
Ethan, obviously, we look at halftime. We watch Donovan and the video resurfaces during the broadcast there in the third quarter. He reaches down at his ankle during warm-ups coming out of halftime. Doesn't play in the second half. How much of that, after an MRI today revealing a little bit of a re-injury, how much of that is a cautionary tale for the Cavs to not overplay Donovan? Well, you're down 41, quite frankly. And how much of that is realistically Donovan Mitchell could possibly not play in a game five?
I just think he wants to be out there. Like, he is the will of this team. He is the most dominating force and arguably could have been deemed one of the best players in the entire playoffs throughout this portion of the playoffs. And I think it's really hard for him to have asked these guys, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and DeAndre Hunter, to come back and then not be out there for game five. So I feel like he'll want to be out there as much as he possibly can. But this is, again, we talked about it earlier on this show, the rewind to previous seasons. Looking back just to last year, Donovan's dealing with that knee injury throughout the Boston Celtics series and then re-aggravates a calf injury because of overexertion. And so we saw that in this instance as well. Obviously, he's dealing with the calf strain to start the series, and then he does so much that he re-aggravates the ankle injury that he had at the end of the regular season that saw him miss the last four games. So I don't think he wants to see a second season in a row come to an end with him on the bench. I think that would be demoralizing for him as somebody who has not gotten out of the conference semifinals and wanting to do that and understanding that his legacy is on the line, because there are going to be some hard conversations this summer if the Cavs cannot get out of this series, and it's looking really bleak.
If Donovan decides he can't go for game five, can the Cavs still pull off a win in that game without Donovan and actually close out a game, or is this series over at five games if Donovan doesn't play?
If Donovan doesn't play, the series is over.
Oof. That is, I can't disagree after the guy drops 40 in multiple games, and you watch the way that it played out last night even with him there, but I don't know. It seems like a tough way to go anyway. And Ethan, I'll ask you too, just to sort of be realistic with it, right? We all want to say, you look at a 3-1 lead, we've seen it done before in this city on a grander stage, obviously with the likes of LeBron, but down 3-1 already, what are the Cavs' chances to come?
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming back.
I got this asked this question the other day, and I think it's 10% chance that they pull off a comeback. Obviously, I think, as I said earlier, it hinges on Evan Mobley, because Donovan has dropped 40 in multiple games. You lost one of those games. You won one of those games. He dropped 30 points in game one, right? He's been averaging 30-plus points. So I think realistically you need him to still have that productivity he's able to play, but somebody else has got to do it, and Evan Mobley is the guy that can make the most impact on both ends of the floor. Obviously, Max Strus, aside from game four, has been really good for the Cavs shooting the ball. He's been their main three-point option. Sam Merrill has shown some life as well. He literally played 14 minutes in game four. I was surprised by that. So I don't know. I think the chances are extremely low, but I think the Cavs have shown that there is a possibility, even though it's slim, for them to make some adjustments to make a comeback. But it has to start with game five at Rocket Arena, and they have to go to Indy and get game six, and then they have to come back and get game seven, because I think if you win two in a row, you feel real good about your chances in game seven, but you got to get there first.
Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, with us on the hotline. Ethan, I see a lot of people, you know, reacting and saying different things after this game about after the season's over. As we go back and reflect on this series and the way that it looks like, how much of this can you chalk up to injuries going into next year? And how much of this is just the Cavs, quite frankly, not showing up when they needed to?
I think it's a little bit of both, but like, we can't keep giving these cop-out answers for injuries, right? Because obviously the Pacers are healthy. Good for them. They somehow continue to find a way to be healthy in the playoffs. Maybe Kenny Atkinson talks to Rick Carlisle over the summer and figure out how they did that, because the Cavs did everything in their power to be healthy. But it's also just comes down to luck. But the Boston Celtics are playing through injuries right now. They're not playing all that great, but they're competing with the Knicks right now in the Eastern Conference semifinals as well. And the Knicks are also not 100%. And you just understand that injuries can't be the reason every year that you look to as a cop-out answer, as an excuse. But I think the understanding is for the Cavs is, once again, we feel like we have enough, but we can't show it if not everybody is playing to their full potential. And I think there's that double-edged sword with that. And it's an interesting conversation to look forward to this summer to figure out what the Cavs are going to be able to do, because we know that they're a second apron team. They could make some drastic moves. They could try and make some moves around the margins, veteran minimums, all these things. And I just think this roster looked so complete. 64 wins is nothing to sneeze at. But I think we have to take a deeper look into the playoff readiness of some of these players and the maturity of the Cavs, especially after yet another Eastern Conference semifinals flame out, if that's how it pans out.
Is there a real chance we go into this offseason, if they, especially the Cavs, go and drop this in five, that we get into a year at the back half of 2025 that does not include every member of the core four?
I think it's everything is on the table if they lose in five. I've heard different things throughout the organization. I've heard different things from other executives around the league. Some are saying that they understand how good the core four is. Other people are saying fireworks, right? Talking about how changes could be made. I'm going to say that everything is on the table for this team if they lose in five. The understanding is that this team won 64 games. They made franchise history on multiple different occasions this year, and they don't want to take that and go away from it. But they understand that the true goal for this entire season was the playoffs, and if they lose in five, then that was not a success. They wanted to at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and the real goal was beating Boston, and they're not even going to have a chance to do that if they lose in five.
Ethan, I'll get you out of here with this one. The Cavs go through and win a game five. What adjustments need to be made in order to do so?
That's a loaded question, because we talked about how there was basically everything needs to be changed. I just think, like, you have to pick an area where you're going to be dominant, right? And that had been the painted area for a majority of this series, because Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam had been playing on the perimeter. And Jared Allen had 2 points, one field goal attempt, and two rebounds in game four. That's unacceptable. Evan Mobley had 10 points, five rebounds, and seven shot attempts. I still think we need more from Evan Mobley. He was 3 of 7 from the field, right? Dean Wade, 11 minutes, 3 points, three rebounds. Need more from him. I think DeAndre Hunter, 16 minutes, 5 points, four rebounds. We can go through the stats, but I think when you talk about domination, when you talk about being able to hang your hat on something, the defensive end has been that for the Cavs throughout the last 3 years, and I think they need to get back to that. That is what helped them win game three. Sure, the shooting was a little bit better, but I think their defensive effort, the hounding of Tyrese Halliburton, the turnovers that they forced, that was what allowed them to win that game. I think they need to focus in on that end of the floor, and if the shots come, the shots come. But they shot 40%. They shot above 30% from three-point range for the first time in game four. We saw how that panned out. You cannot just rely on the offensive end of the floor for this team. You have to rely on the defense because it's what has gotten to you this far, and the playoffs have not been nice to you on the offensive end. So I think you have to take that into a reality check and go back to what has gotten you this far. And shout out to J.B. Bickerstaff because maybe he was a little bit foresight on that one.
All right, Ethan, definitely a little bit of a shout out to J.B. As much as Cavs fans maybe not feeling the greatest about his time here, definitely a defensive side helped it. Ethan, as always, good stuff. I appreciate you carving out the time, sitting down with us, and I look forward to hopefully talking to you after an immaculate comeback win and before an Eastern Conference Finals.
Always good talking to you, Jake. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Ethan Sands with us there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Check him out at cleveland.com. Always good stuff.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.